Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
From KQED. What do you need more than puppy love during an election year, right? Some dog therapy?
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, Governor Gavin Newsom will be heading to Rome next month. He's one of several state and local officials invited to speak at the Pope's Vatican Climate Summit. The governor will focus on how the changing climate is affecting California's ability to cope with droughts, wildfires, and floods. And it all comes as the California Public Utilities Commission considers a new rule that could affect the bill ratepayers get in the mail each month, with critics saying recent price increases are at odds with California's climate goals. Joining me to talk about it all and more, KQED's politics correspondents Marisa Lagos and Guy Marzorati. Hey, you two.
Hey, happy Scott. Monday.
So the governor's office announced this morning that Gavin Newsom is going to be speaking at the Vatican's climate summit. He's going to be focusing on droughts and wildfires and floods. Marisa, the governor has long made climate change policies a top priority. He's really building. I mean, he didn't create that. He's building on what Jerry Brown and Arnold Schwarzenegger have done for, you know, more than a decade.
Yeah, I think shout out to Schwarzenegger. You know, we have to remember that even though the left and quite frankly, the right was pretty mad at him by the time he left office for a number of things, he did push through our landmark climate change bill, AB 32, the original, the OG. And yeah, this is something that I think you could say Jerry Brown really almost not only focused on, but Brown was sort of famous for taking a few things and really focusing in on them deep. I think Newsom tends to have a broader view of things, but obviously this is, you know, not just something that I think he has pushed California, continued to push us to the forefront of, but obviously is something that plays well for him nationally, right? It is, we are a leader in this, and he gets to go out and represent California at places like the Vatican.
Absolutely. And Guy, you know, we've seen that unlike, say, Jerry Brown, this governor really likes to mix it up and likes to get in sort of fights with red state governors and attorneys general and politicians writ large. So this is really, really a very good opportunity, very much his brand, huh?
Definitely. But I do find it interesting the way Newsom talks about the climate crisis, and especially in a venue like the Vatican talking with the Pope, something, as you mentioned, Jerry Brown did back when he was governor. There's a little bit of a difference in the way those two governors approach this. I think the Pope has talked extensively about how fighting climate change, it can't be what he calls in the technocratic paradigm, which is just to say, like, the climate crisis we face, the climate reality is just one more problem that awaits a better technological solution, a better scientific solution, and that it's really, the Pope would argue, like our culture of consumption that's kind of at the heart of driving environmental degradation. That's much more in line with Jerry Brown's ethos, right? More of a frugal mentality. Newsom, I would say, looks at the climate crisis as, you know, another opportunity for California to kind of invent its way out of the next calamity. And I wonder how that kind of plays out at the Vatican.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown was or is a Jesuit, right? And so is the Pope.
As is the Pope, yeah.
Yeah, and also as you were talking, it occurred to me that, you know, Newsom is a graduate of Santa Clara University, as are you. But it does give, this whole thing gives the governor a chance to talk about the sort of the morality of climate change policy, right?
I mean, right. That's been kind of the Pope's ethos on this, is that this is he's taking a moral stand. And I think in a large part, the you know, debates and the push that we've seen in California around environmental justice, that's something that, you know, we've become very accustomed to politically in conversations about, you know, pollution at the local level and where, you know, oil refinery happens. That's something that the Pope has kind of taken to an international stage.
Yeah, I was just going to say, though, too, I do think that the entry point here for Newsom, that where, you know, it does sort of coexist nicely with what the Pope is saying, which is that this isn't, again, just something that, like, top national governments need to tackle, that really, to Guy's point, the change needs to come from those of us on the ground, but also the, you know, governments on the ground. So this idea that this is really a bringing together of mayors and governors and not the heads of nation states, I think, you know, is something that obviously plays well for Newsom, but also I think, you know, is something that he and his administration have had to start talking about because of things like the need for the public to embrace electric vehicles, the need for us to install solar and do all those things.
Exactly. And of course, the governor loves to talk about these things. And just the other day, he released a video of himself driving a car, and it has to do with Tesla opening up some of these superchargers to non-Tesla vehicles.
So I just pulled up to a Tesla charging station, but not in a Tesla, because today we're announcing Tesla is opening up its charging network to additional models of electric vehicles. This is all in an effort to build out the infrastructure in the state of California that currently...
Now, I have to say, yesterday, coincidentally, I was at a Tesla supercharging center in Livermore, and there was a long line of cars already waiting. I think people plugged them in and then went shopping at the outlet mall. So it's great that this, you know, these superchargers are going to be available to more people. But they really, you know, Guy, they have to add more of these superchargers, which they're going to do. But they're, you know, this increased demand is going to be frustrating, I think, for some drivers.
Well, a couple things. In the newsroom, we always say focus on the verb. What is the verb Newsom was using? Announcing. He's announcing that Tesla is opening up these chargers. That's actually something Tesla did in response to a federal law in order to qualify for federal money. So Newsom, he's announcing that this is happening. We could also announce that this is happening. This is not necessarily a California effort. But to your point about the charging stations, this is a huge issue for California and the U.S. as we push, you know, as the state and local government push for the electrification of the transportation fleet, is that there's just not a reliable source right now of public chargers. Building up that infrastructure, I mean, California has doled out billions of dollars to build up this, you know, EV charging infrastructure. And it really has no idea how those are running and how each individual station is running. What's the maintenance? What's the upkeep? Those are huge questions for the legislature and for Newsom to tackle in the years ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, as we keep increasing these goals of selling more and using more electric vehicles, Marisa, it's, you know, if the infrastructure is not there, people are going to be very reluctant, especially if you have to drive any kind of a distance.
I mean, I think we're already seeing this, right? The people that tend to have EVs are people who are wealthy enough to have more than one car in their household because they're not great for road trips or things like that. I also just got a laugh and aside seeing that video where he pulls up, not in a Tesla, right, in another electric vehicle.
It was a Mustang,
for the record. Back of, well, remember when there was a profile of him several years ago where the writer pulled up to his house and when he was still in Marin before he was governor, and there was two Teslas in the driveway. So if anyone knows about Tesla charging, it's probably Gavin Newsom. I think that this is obviously part of the problem. The other thing is just the cost, right? Back to my point about wealthier households and, you know, the need for people who are maybe in more of the middle income to start investing in these. They're going to need to build out that infrastructure to make that more attractive to people sort of across the you know, socioeconomic spectrum.
And Guy, of course, Newsom and every other state really is benefiting from the Inflation Reduction Act, which is spending a lot of money on this infrastructure. So it comes at a good time as far as California goes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what's interesting about this trip to the Vatican, because it will come just days after Newsom reveals his revised budget, which is expected to include some cuts to environmental programs. But again, the theory with those cuts was a lot of it could be, you know, backfilled by the federal government and all the spending that they've allocated for environmental programs.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, a big decision coming up soon from California's utilities regulator, the CPUC. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Outdoor Supply Hardware, inviting listeners to Osh's big anniversary sale celebration, May 20th through the 26th, featuring daily deals, $15,000 in giveaways, 20% off store-wide on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot more. Learn more at osh.com.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, talking with KQED's politics correspondents, Guy Marzorati and Marisa Lagos. And Guy, next week, actually in 2 weeks, the CPUC, the California Public Utilities Commission, is going to consider a new rule change that could affect people's utility bills. It's got to do with a fixed charge ratepayers would see. It's so complicated, and I know you'll get it. We won't go too far down the rabbit hole, but tell us what it is. What is this rule they're considering?
Yeah, so just taking a step back, this idea of a fixed charge is built upon the fact that we have enormous utility costs in California that go beyond the cost of just delivering electricity to your home, namely wildfire prevention, wildfire mitigation, things like burying power lines. That's a huge project that utilities are taking on. So, you know, instead of baking those costs into your usage rate, which is what happens now, there have been a few ideas on, okay, how do we pay for this? Some people say the state should pay for it. It should be in the general fund, taxpayers. Others would say, you know, utilities should take that on instead of, you know, delivering money to their shareholders. Those are not happening politically, and we can maybe get into that. But what the CPUC is proposing is these fixed charges. So adding a charge on every bill to pay for, you know, you can call it the overhead. And these fixed charges are going to be income based. There was an initial proposal that was very controversial because the highest, the fixed charges on the highest income earners would have been almost like $130 a month. Now they're proposing this tiered system of like $24 down to $12, down to $6, depending on income. So it does bring up this debate over rate fairness versus reducing energy usage. And I think it's just one debate in this larger plot that I find one of the most fascinating things happening in Sacramento this decade, which is how Democrats navigate this energy transition with the party's goals of equity on one hand and emission reductions on the other that don't always line up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, you know, as you guys know, I have covered PG&E and its many problems, let's say, in the past, namely the wildfire issue, but I think more broadly. And electric rates are always so complicated. The justification that has to go into them from a legal standpoint is super complicated. But I think in recent years, we're just adding this other level of complication to the mix, which, you know, historically, to Guy's point, you kind of had rates that are set by how much it costs to make the energy, and then infrastructure costs that are kind of added to that. And that's actually how the utility makes their money, right, is investing in infrastructure. Well, for a long time, the impetus on the part of government was to encourage people to use less electricity, right? We were
conservation.
Conservation based on the fact that it was dirty and we didn't want to be making more coal powered and other sort of dirty forms. Now about half of what we make in California is clean. And so it's created this perverse incentive. We want people to be switching over their utility appliances from gas to electric in a way we want them to use more electricity. But obviously, that costs more. And I think what's interesting about this debate is I think, again, it gets so layered. In the past, you could have said, oh, a person with a pool in a suburb and a lawn is the one using sort of the most electricity. Well, that may not be true. I mean, I own a 100-year-old home. It needs upgrades that we haven't been able to put into it yet. And that means, you know, my bill is going to potentially be more than somebody in a giant house with solar panels and other sort of...
And electric vehicles.
Electric vehicles and maybe all electric appliances.
Yeah. And Guy, this, of course, this what they're considering at the CPUC would come on top of a big rate increase that people have been complaining about, a $2 billion plus, I think $2.5 billion that the CPUC is allowing PG&E to, you know, ask ratepayers to cover, and that has to do with wildfires and other things. So there's a political downside potential here, isn't there?
Right. I think it gets into this idea of like rate rage. And when does that hit a point in which it's not politically palatable to keep, you know, approving these kind of changes? This is a really difficult issue for Democrats. There was a bill in the legislature last week authored by Republican Brian Jones from San Diego area that would have repealed the CPUC's plan, that basically would have gone back on this fixed charge plan. And there were 14 Democrats on that committee. None of them voted yes. None of them voted no. They just abstained and let the bill die because it's a lot of the voter base for Democrats, particularly in the coastal parts of California, are wealthier suburban residents who benefit from things like, you know, solar panels and these changes. We're talking about the fixed rate change now, but there was a change a couple years ago regarding incentives for installing solar that were taken away that took a big hit to the state's solar industry. Those were all things that the affluent suburban Democratic voter base works against their interests. And so it puts these elected officials in a tough spot when they have these proposals before them that are really aimed at equity and aimed at making sure that low-income ratepayers are not bearing an over, you know, proportioned cost when it comes to the fixed things that we all pay for, like making sure there's not these really damaging wildfires.
Yeah, Maurice, I was going to say, you know, coming back to the political risk, I mean, I covered the recall of Governor Gray Davis, which was largely over energy costs and blackouts. Later turned out Enron was manipulating the market. But, you know, you've got to figure that Newsom, you know, he is facing up another potential recall. We don't know how serious this one is. But, you know, utility rates like inflation, gas prices is something that really everyone notices.
Yeah, I mean, because we have no choice, right? And I think you have to acknowledge too the real unpopularity of these utilities, particularly PG&E, because of what their equipment has caused when it comes to wildfires, and even going back to your point, 25 years, you know, the electricity crisis. I mean, to Guy's point about this being tough for Democrats, I think the power of the utility lobby is really illustrated in another bill that died last week, which is Dave Min, assembly member from Orange County, who's running for Congress. This would have essentially said you cannot use rates to cover political activities and advertising. And, you know, that kind of seems like something that Democrats would want to go with, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Guy, if you watched that hearing, but it is just fascinating to me that even in this day and age, even when you often hear them put up these utilities kind of as the boogeyman on the left, there still isn't the political appetite there to actually sort of limit the way they can use this money for political activities. And they do. They use a lot of money for not just lobbying, advertisements, other, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and Guy, you pointed out another bill. This is from Rebecca Bauer Cahan from the East Bay, AB 2054, which basically would slow that revolving door to have a 10-year freeze on people going from being regulators of utilities to going to work for the utilities, which, of course, they would bring with them all that strategy and insights that you have as a regulator into getting rate increases and that sort of thing. And that has gone to the Appropriations Committee, which, you know, as we know, sometimes things die there.
Yeah, I mean, and that one is, you know, is still alive and it has gotten support in committee. So, you know, we'll see how that turns out. But I do think you add on top of the political impact that these utilities have, and also that the unions, you know, that Marisa, you've done some reporting on this in the past, and the way in which the unions representing electrical workers also can, you know, throw around their political weight as well. So you have, you know, when that bill came up to repeal these fixed rate charges that the CPUC is pursuing, there was a long list of, you know, folks who wanted to keep this rate structure in place. And it ranged from the utilities to the unions, the workers for the utilities, to ratepayer advocates, groups like TURN. So there is a large constituency that's okay in moving with this somewhat more progressive direction, even if you have, you know, a lot of wealthier residents who feel like, look, this is going to take away the incentive I have to save and you know, not use as much electricity.
Well, and as a practical matter, too, like as these electricity prices go up, it makes the idea of buying an electric vehicle a little bit less appealing, you know, especially if fossil fuel prices come down. And so there are all these like cross currents and potential conflicts with, you know, both, you know, environmental goals and also concerns about the economy and just, you know, how are ratepayers going to feel about all this?
Yeah. And then on top of it, even though PG&E has gone back to the PUC, what, like 3 or 4 times over the past year to ask for these increased rates or changes to the way they do this. Just last week, the CEO told the Los Angeles Daily News that bills could start dropping in PG&E territory as soon as next year, saying that they sharply raise these rates to help pay for wildfire prevention and response, but that, you know, they might kind of come back down, which, you know, as a ratepayer, I'll believe it when I see it.
Exactly. Well, I wonder if they're feeling a little political pressure. You'd think
absolutely,
probably they do.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, she was on our show last year. I would totally encourage folks to go back and listen to it. It was a really interesting interview. But at its core, I think, is a question I've will continue to ask until I'm blue in the face, which is like, is the entire sort of system broken by virtue of the fact that we have these utilities that we all rely on that are traded publicly on the stock market? Do the ultimate sort of goals and objectives align between Wall Street and all the things we're talking about, from protecting consumers to protecting our environment, you know, to moving into a really a completely kind of new system than something that our entire nation has been built on for the last century?
Yeah. And, you know, just to your point, PG&E reported that its profits were up 29% in the first quarter over a year ago. And so, you know, and I don't know
what a comeback story, man. Like, yeah, this is a company that was in bankruptcy just a few years ago. If you go and look at their stock ticker, I mean, it is wild. We don't give advice on this show, but I gotta say, if you want a good bet, PG&E stock seems to be one of them. Yeah, you gotta hold.
Loretta Lynch, who is a very sharp attorney, she was on the CPUC. She was there.
She was the head of it. Yeah,
she was the head of it when Gray Davis was governor, and she went through this energy crisis and the Enron manipulation of the system. She was also an early opponent of deregulation. And she wrote an op-ed recently in the Chronicle Guy that said basically the CPUC has totally dropped the ball in terms of their primary responsibility, which is protecting ratepayers.
I mean, yeah, and this also gets to a question about the autonomy of the CPUC and that we've seen play out in this debate over fixed rates, because the legislature a few years ago basically gave the CPUC permission to go ahead and figure out this fixed rate structure on its own. The legislature signed off on this in a budget bill that had a million other things in it. And I think it raises the question, who should be making these final determinations about the rates that we're all seeing on our bills? If it's moves from the folks that we're directly electing and they're handing it over to regulators who I don't think most people on the street could name the members of the CPUC. I think it does raise, you know, questions about responsibility. You know, not even to bring up what we just talked about and the kind of revolving door that we see in the utility world between regulators and people working in industry.
Marisa, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but even before, you know, this most recent round of rate increases, I think California had the second highest electricity rates in the country. I think Hawaii maybe is higher.
I think that's still right.
Why is that? I mean, is it just too complicated to go? Just the look on your face tells me, oh, I don't want to talk about this. It's too complicated. You know?
But I think, I mean, it's a good question. I don't know all of the answers to that, but I do think that, you know, there are a lot of places that don't necessarily have publicly traded utilities. You do have states and jurisdictions where, you know, they're publicly owned. We are a big state, right, with a lot of territory to cover and a lot of dangers, like when you talk about things like wildfires. So, it is, I mean, you know, we kind of pay more for most things here in California.
Yeah.
Cost of doing business.
Yeah. Guy, don't you have an electric car? Don't you have a Chevy?
I do.
Yeah.
Well, are you looking for a review? Or
We've already given stock advice, although checking it actually really it has fallen significantly since those wildfires started in 2017.
No, I was just wondering, like, have you noticed like the increase? Have you noticed it as you're charging your car?
Well, I mean, one thing I have noticed is this, you know, problems with the public charging stations. I think you talk to anyone who owns an EV, like the public charging stations, there, you know, you go to some stations and there's just no machine working. Like if you were to show up at one out of every four gas stations and the gas pump wasn't working, that would be like a front page story. And I think it's the extent to which the state has spent a lot of money, you know, standing up this infrastructure without much idea how it's actually working, is, you know, a big problem, big question going forward.
Well, and speed too. I mean, the superchargers that Tesla has are much, much faster than most of the other ones that are available, which I assume is the majority of the chargers that are part of the grid or part of the infrastructure here, right?
Yeah, and who's maintaining? I mean, you go to a gas station, there's someone working there who's maintaining that infrastructure, right? That who is that at these, you know, public EV stations?
TBD. I don't know the answer. Thank you so much, Guy Marzorati, Marisa Lagos. Always good to chat with my friends and colleagues. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Scott.
That is a wrap for Monday, April 29th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Our producer is back, Izzy Bloom. Good to have you back. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever wonder what it's like to live alone? hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years. Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles. The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles? The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.